How great is it on our weekend of celebrating genocide, we get to watch more white people explain or contextualize a genocide?
I mean, that's why we had the humanitarian pause. We're like, look, we can only do one genocide at a time.
We can't chew genocide gum and genocide walk at the same time.
Welcome, 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 one and all, to the Bituation Room Podcast Live. So happy to be back. So happy to have you here. If you're tuning in, I am extra 70s with the little, you know, collar and chain situation. I guess The Rock has a song about this. I don't know. I literally don't follow what The Rock does. Does he want to be president? Sure. Fine. Have it. Go. But really happy to have you guys back, after this, what feels like forever away, even though it's been just a week since we did a show, but we didn't have our bonus on Friday, which of course, if you're like bonus, what? Yeah. Patreon.com/bituationroom, act like you know. But we have such a good show. Really, really excited, to welcome back, comedian Gareth Reynolds, fresh off a tour throughout Australia. Obviously, he's from the Dollop podcast. He has an incredible special we'll talk about in a little bit that I hope you guys have all seen. And then also we're joined by the founder of Community Movement Builders, Kamau Franklin. And Kamau has been organizing one of the many organizations that is trying to stop the building of Cop City in Atlanta, specifically this, you know, training ground for police to brutalize Black and brown and poor communities, that has been repressed for months, years now, and is getting very little mainstream attention, if at all. But some of the worst, we're going to talk about, you know, human rights violations and egregious things. Last week we talked about what's going on in the West Bank. I mean, not quite West Bank levels, but you know, hey, ultimately I'm sure when Cop City, if it ever gets built, you know, IDF soldiers will surely train there. So again, the militarism that we face in this country and abroad is one and the same, but I am very excited to have Kamau on and to understand what is going on with this movement to resist this. What are the chances of it surviving, and how can we all pitch in to stop something like this from happening right now? So stay tuned for that. And then finally, very interestingly, the state of New Hampshire, which is actually one of the states in this lovely country of ours that I have been to and visited and in the 2016 presidential election, big Bernie Trump state. Big, if not Trump, or if not Bernie Trump, which was just, you know, still a head scratcher, but you know, we'll talk about it. New Hampshire has decided they're going to circumvent what the DNC wants, and they want to still be first when it comes to primary voting in the 2024 election. So we're going to get into the kerfuffle of what New Hampshire would like, and how Iowa's mad, but not really mad, but really the state that's going to be voting first is South Carolina. And we want to know, I want to know, what state do you think in this beautiful nation of ours, perfect in its lack of public transportation and, you know, working class, robust working class, which state should vote first in the presidential primaries? Which state and why? All right. I want to hear it from y'all. But for now, if you're here listening as a podcast, give this podcast 5 stars. Why don't you? And if you are watching as a stream, hey, like the like button, share button, and click the little bell, because then you'll get a notification every time we're going live and you're like, oh shit, she's half an hour late and or early and or I just don't have the alarm on my phone like I have it to take my birth control pill, like I'm sure you all do. So yeah, click that little alarm bell. And if you're on Twitch, sup? Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for all of your support. You can also become a member on both of these platforms and get access to that bonus content, like I was mentioning before. And like I said, like there's, if you're just listening to this, know that you're missing out on another hour and change sometimes of dope rants from yours. Dope Rants is the name of that podcast. Dope Rant. But it's fun, it's irreverent, and it's often maybe a little more heartfelt in some ways and a little more serious. I don't know. It's fun. It's good. Although Vice News is now sort of imploding, so all of my weird stories about like tools shaped like dicks that were found in, you know, ancient Bolivia or whatever, or like that's all going to be, you know, that's all going to be thrown into the fray here. So, but anyway, patreon.com/bituationroom, guys, support this show, literally supported by you and you alone. This is an ad-free show. Remember, I'm affiliated with multiple people, including the American Prospect magazine, which I write for, which if you become a patron, you get discounts on the American Prospect paperback version. Also, you get to be a member of their online version. It's a great magazine. But other than that, like, you're my sponsor. I answer to you. I shill for no one but the people. Shill for the people, guys. All right. With that, let's get into it because we have limited time. Woo, let's go. Let's talk about what you're bitching about. So it is, God, we're almost 2 months into Israel's war on Gaza. Most recently, and we'll talk about there's been a temporary truce. I don't even like the word humanitarian pause. I don't really understand how that sounds like a humane society. Humanitarian pause. Rawr. Like it's not really there's nothing humanitarian about what's happening right now. But I will just say the biggest news story for me adjacent to the war on Gaza and the mass crimes there is the discrepancy in media coverage. I think that anyone who is an investigative journalist or anyone who's an analyst, a pundit, truly the story of this war, other than, oh my God, this is happening, these war crimes are going down, is the fact that depending on who you are and where you get your media from, you have vastly different understandings of what is actually going on in Gaza. If you are on Instagram and TikTok, generally, if you're younger and you're following some of these on the ground journalists who like were media influencers who just like happened to live in Gaza and were like travel people. And then they were like, oh, crap, now my entire community has been leveled to the ground. You're seeing bodies of babies. You're seeing children covered in soot and their parents saying prayers over them and saying goodbye to them. You're seeing entire neighborhoods leveled. You're seeing ambulance convoys being bombed. You're seeing, a hilarious lack of evidence that the hospitals were used as bases and all the things that we've talked about on the show. And then if you're a CNN head, which is what they call themselves, or you're an MSNBC, Stan, I don't know, like you're seeing a completely different picture in large part. I mean, and again, the other thing you're not seeing is context, right? Context about the occupation, context about Israel's other wars on Gaza, context about the discrepancy in civilian deaths in those cases too, right? Somehow we've left it to TikTokers to explain to us, which I know you should immediately be dubious about, and yet there's a huge vacuum when it comes to actually presenting real information. So we don't have honest coverage in mainstream news. So I was having a conversation with a friend lately who just said, look, I've been watching Democracy Now! And kind of mistrustful of a lot of mainstream outlets because all they're really covering is the human interest angle only from the point of Israelis, which the human interest angle is important, but it's like you are literally lifting up just this one family, one group of people over this other group of people that has suffered disproportionately more loss. And so it's a very active thing that's happening right now, to say nothing of buying the Biden line, right? And buying the Biden line of like, we can draw no red lines on Israel, nor condition aid, although that's being discussed now. And look, hey, I gave you a humanitarian pause. So what I think the real story is that depending on how old you are, who you are, and what media platforms you're on, you're getting vastly different information, and that these outlets like MSNBC, like CNN, like the New York Times, like all of these outlets that spend so much time fighting against Trump's, cries of like, you're fake news, you're da-da-da-da-da. Well, what Trump was ultimately doing there was he was picking up the threads of sort of the media's lack of credibility from 20 years of the war on terror, right? The lack of credibility, the credibility they lost when they goose-stepped with the Pentagon into two plus wars, Iraq, Afghanistan, you know, and other places, Pakistan, places we've droned and so on and so forth. And we, you know, as a millennial, like, we lost complete faith in mainstream news. Then it started sort of building back. And but Trump kind of like took that and, you know, hammered it from a right wing fascist angle, but picked on some of that truth. And now what's happening? Now, all those, like, the idea that this is fake news, the idea that they're not telling you the whole truth, that's actually true. Like, it's come back, right? It's come back around. And it always, the test is always when there's a march to war. How will mainstream outlets react? And they are, clearly, they have more amnesia than anyone. And there's some exceptions, right? Joanne Reed with a certain monologue, Ayman Mohedin, Mehdi Hassan, right? MSNBC is doing far better job than CNN has. But all to say that, like, guys, this is that, you know, for such, for lack of a better term, like Trump-obsessed, Trump derangement syndrome, you know, mainstream legacy news outlets that really wanted your sympathy when Trump was going after them and received it. I mean, they are obliterating their credibility as we speak, as they deliberately narrow their focus away from the objective truth of who is being killed and slaughtered in mass war crimes. And who had, yes, a terrorist act aggressed upon them, but by comparison is just incomparable. So it scares me, because it scares me for the future, and it scares me for, yes, another Trump run or another neo-fascist run, because again, the media is this fifth estate. They're important. They're supposed to be watchdogs. And when it comes to war, no, they're hook, line, and sinker, the stewards of a lot of whatever is coming out of, you know, the Pentagon or the security, national security state and apparatus. So yeah, it's funny because I get thrust back and suddenly I'm like, why am I feeling 19 again? And it's like, oh, because the mainstream news sucks, you know? And suddenly I'm back to, you know, the war on terror bullshit, and we're all sort of there, and we're all, but we didn't have social media. So that's what I'm bitching about. I'm bitching about the fact that this is the biggest story and that this will have ramifications for decades in terms of, you know, trusting legacy media. And then when all their viewership dies, what are we, like, how are you gonna get us to pay? You know what I'm saying? Like, what are you gonna do? You're gonna offer, like, you can't offer that many, like, loaded tater tots recipes, New York Times. You know what I'm saying? You're gonna have to switch it up. You're gonna have to try. You're gonna have to incorporate a lot more astrology to get these young folks on board. Or just admit that what's going on is ethnic cleansing. Either way. Anyway, let's move on because my guest is such a G who has been on the show multiple times. He's a G because the name is Gareth. That's right. Gareth the G. Gareth with a G. He's a stand-up comic, co-host of the Dollop podcast and the We're Here to Help podcast, which is very exciting. You can watch his special England Weed and the Rest on YouTube now, and somehow he has time for this show. Gareth Reynolds, welcome.
How did I find the time? speaking of merch, We're Here to Help. Gotta promote it.
When you wear that, like, in just a store, do people think you work there?
what a puzzling question. No.
Like, you look like you work at REI. You know, you look like you're going to sell me a tent.
I'm picturing, like, a Vons.
I like that.
But, yeah, I think in an REI, I've been definitely, first of all, I go to a lot of REIs. And, yeah, most times I'm there, people, I'm a big raisin snacker in public. So I've always got a lot of raisins and I wear a hat like this, and people in REI come up to me a lot and they're like, Hey, and I don't have the heart to say no. I'll be like, yeah, what do you need? And then I'm like, I probably have killed people, like rock climbers, because I'm like, that old's about 120 kilos for sure. And, you know, people are like, great, I'll use
you're using kilos. Family. You already lost them.
Yeah. I've been in Australia. I haven't adapted back yet.
No, it's okay. You're part English, right?
Yep. They're not the same, just so you know. Not all white people are from the same place.
Oh, right, YouTube. Right. You sent your baddies over there, I guess. Yeah, supposed. Yes.
We sent our convict. Listen, if you're going to try to break down and trace the roots of the English and Great Britain as far as being horrible, that's a different show, okay? That's not the one we're doing.
We're here to focus on Biden's mistakes.
Yes. Different.
Colby. Although I am watching the last season of The Crown, which is just like too real. I'm like, yeah, we lived it.
Yeah, I've not seen it.
So anyway, congrats on killing the princess. But also, Gareth, what are you bitching about?
They killed the princess, and I'm not okay with that. Well, I think it's a little relevant to what you were talking about. It is how ads on news, on how we get our ads. Like, anytime you go to read an article, and you're like, all right, I'll read this article. I would say 50% of the time while trying to close a pop-up for something I don't want, I end up on the ad. And I'm like, no, that reinforces what they want. The ads that chase you, the ones that where they you're like, I'll scroll down out of it. And it's like, I'm still here. I'm still here. Those ads. And then also places where I'll like get like. And I mean, my podcast does ads, but we're like, hey, here are our ads. All right, here's our show.
Right.
The way that like when I will watch like some YouTube commentators and with how dark things get, the ability for them to find a balance between like, you know, we have a really dark show today. Obviously, there's been a lot of bombing going on in Gaza. We are also going to talk to an expert who says that murders are up in Chicago and why that's going on. But before we get into that, we want to promote holiday sweaters. We have our holiday sweater line, and we're excited to do that. And just the way that our ads and our promotion penetrate the seriousness of what's going on, that is what I'm bitching. Just,
I know it's really rough that it's happening during the holidays, you know, like
it is. Well, remember,
it was indeed a Black Friday. And speaking of Black Friday,
there's that Don Lemon clip where I forget who he's talking to, but it's a horrible story and needs to be called out on mainstream media. And as the person's doing it, he's sort of going, I think it might have been like for a strike. And he's like, yeah, but okay, all right, you're going to strike. But what about the holidays? People aren't going to be able to get their holiday gifts. And you're just like, dude, there's always going to be a reason to not do this. But yes, the way that capitalism puts its foot up the ass of the reality that we should all fear, that really gets my goat.
I'm mad at all ads except for the Temu or Temu ads, the ones that are like, you know, I'm a grandma. What do you do? You know,
that's
like,
because I don't get
shirts.
You know what you know what else I noticed when you'll be watching, like, and YouTube has a way to do this. They must, but where they'll be like throwing to a clip, they'll be like, you know, and actually President Biden had something interesting to say about that. And as they're about to cut to the clip, it'll just be some guy who's like, you have 10 pounds of unpooped poop in your stomach. And you're like, wait, how did they know that they were going to a clip? And who is this guy who's like, your soap is killing your skin? It's always that.
Yeah, they're always trying to get me to drink mud, but also the Temu ads. It's basically like SkyMall for the internet. It's amazing. I love it. So
I should have bitched about how I want SkyMall back.
Such a loss. Where am I gonna get like I need a 15-foot Yeti for my yard.
Better times. I wanted a globe for my dog.
Globe.
Dog globes. There's always something,
you know,
like that.
So like, they can globe around.
You need a driving range in your bathroom. You're like, I didn't know it was possible, and I think I might.
All right, well, let's get into this. Oh, we got to go, because so many things happen, but only two on this show. This is the week where. So we are in mid-prisoner swap, humanitarian pause moment in this ongoing war on Gaza, or the Israel-Hamas war, however you want to say it. There was a pause negotiated with the help of Qatar, the country, or Qatar, or however you want to say it. And this is just a little bit from Jazeera. So this is on November 22nd. Israel and Hamas agreed to this temporary pause in the war that would enable the release of captives. It took significant U.S. pressure to get the deal done, which tells you it's going to take what it's going to take in terms of U.S. pressure to get something more permanent in place, if not a transition to Palestinian self-rule of some kind. James Dorsey, who is a fellow at the Middle East Institute in Singapore, said. Yeah, that's, we'll talk about the lasting situation, but it seems like there was an initial 4 days, obviously for
holiday,
Turkey Day,
holiday break.
I mean,
everybody likes to watch football.
Can we just take a break and give each other a little butt pat?
Thank you.
And, you know, concuss one another or whatever.
Very negative.
And get to it. But it was interesting. So the initial prisoner swap, and there have been additions, and so I don't know when everyone's going to be listening to this, but there have sort of been an initial, again, a 2 days tacked on, and I think a lot of people are hoping that this can be expanded on. I'm going to maybe pour some, you know, water on that, cold water, a blanket, you know, all of it.
That sounds like waterboarding.
Yeah, I'm going to waterboard that hope right now. But the initial prisoner swap was really interesting, Gareth, because it was 50 Israeli hostages for 150 Palestinians. Now, don't get me wrong, as someone who's like, you know, for Palestinian human rights and understands, we're going to talk about who was been in prison, but I'm like, this agreement is literally defining like that one Palestinian life is, or three Palestinian lives is equal to one Palestinian, I mean, one Israeli.
Yeah.
This is a little bit more, because it was like 150 Palestinians to 50 Israeli hostages. It's just like, I don't know.
You also can get caught up in the numbers of the captures since this all started. And when you actually start to, the way that you've got to actually kind of try to recalibrate your value of human life in this is almost impossible to quantify, where you're just kind of going like, okay, but like so many have been killed. It's like so many Palestinians have been killed since then. And it's very hard to be like, what is good cumulatively anymore with all of this?
It's so true. I mean, and we're being told that this is like a major coup, you know, by Biden and such, but it's so true. So one, you know, Jazeera has reported this week also that like, while 150 Palestinian prisoners were released, 133 were arrested in the West Bank.
So it's like, it's really nuts. It's also like, when they first started floating out the term pause, it was just like, what are you talking about? And the fact that we're actually in the midst of it now it just shows you how low the bar really is for all this. Like you said, I mean, to sort of have a holiday break is, it's great, but knowing that there is, that, you know, there's much more carnage to come. That is very obvious. When your goal, when, you know, it would be one thing if your goal was a ceasefire and you were on a 4-day pause, but when your goal is a pause and you're on a 4-day pause, it doesn't really give you tons of hope as far as what are we actually going for here?
Yeah, I mean, I believe it was someone with Doctors Without Borders, a representative who on a European news program, I can't remember the name of it, who was basically like, explained the cruelty of a humanitarian pause, allowing, you know, some food and water, which, by the way, better be cooked because people don't even have like flames or electricity with which to eat the food or cook the food. But how cruel it is to be like, oh, we're going to fatten you up so when we continue killing you, you'll have a full stomach. Like, I mean, it's just wild. And, you know, to say nothing of like, yes, the threat of famine, the threat of disease, the fact that like clean water is hard to come by. I mean, I think water is probably like the number one. And so there have been some trucks that have been allowed in, but to your point about the, you know, sort of, we're being asked to sort of like equate everything. You know, there were, you know, among the hostages taken by Hamas, soldiers, right? Israeli soldiers. You compare the people who Palestinians are asking to be released. And of 300 of them, 270 are children, 30 women. 233 of those have not been convicted of anything. And 21 have been accused, but of throwing stones.
It's good. It's good. I will just say, when I see lists like that, and you did want some comedy in this show, so allow me to attempt
it. Yes,
please. It feels like we always leave the lives of men off these lists. I know men are not, I'm all for women and children being saved, and I value them, but it really always feels like if it's a man, we're like, look, that's okay. But 30 women. I mean, can I stand up for the fellas? Do we do that?
I mean, you're mostly just like arm candy. I feel like you have to deal with that.
It feels like the centuries of full-on oppression and overrule have cost us men in the long run, which I don't love. As a man who has a cat and finds himself to be very feminine in most of his ways, except for the REI look. I think that, you know, it is. It really is. It's like, I mean, the parallel to Ukraine gets drawn all the time, and it's a very good one. When when you see not Jake Sullivan, that other piece of shit.
Tapper?
No, no. What's his name? He's been the liar for the Pentagon forever. But he gets choked up over the lives of the Ukrainian deaths, and when it comes to Palestinian deaths, he calls it war. War is bad. War is brutal. This is war.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, John, we have a little.
John Kirby. Yeah.
We have John Kirby saying, let's go to that actually briefly. And before we do, I just want to, like, when Gareth says women and children first, I mean, it's almost like that's the IDF's goal. This was from the New York Times, you know, noted left-wing outlet, about now 15,000 dead. This, I think, says about 14 or just over 14,000. And the staggering rate of about 10,000, it looks like, of those 14,000 have been women and children. Now, the rest are all people, and I assume they mean people with those little thanglings.
Yeah, men.
Little
human men.
Or people who, yeah.
Fellas.
Yeah.
Fellas.
No, I don't. What are they? I'm forgetting the name for them.
The penist.
Oh, I don't. They're a minority population, unimportant, just sort of there.
Nice to be called a minority finally. It was good. Been a while.
No, but so, I mean, it is awful. And like, just let's go to John Kirby and then we'll, we gotta go. Let's go to John Kirby. This is the kind of stuff that he is saying and they're throwing around. Whenever you say genocide, which by the way, forcible removal, Armenian genocide, Native American genocide, always part of the genocide. When you have the trappings of the genocide, it's hard for us to not look at it and be like, a million people displaced, probably genocide. Here he is.
But this word genocide is getting thrown around in a pretty inappropriate way by lots of different folks. What Hamas wants, make no mistake about it, is genocide. They want to wipe Israel off the map. They've said so publicly more than one occasion. In fact, just recently. And they've said that they're not going to stop. What happened on the 7th of October is going to happen again and again and again. And what happened on the 7th of October? Murder, slaughter of innocent people in their homes or at a music festival. That's genocidal intentions. Yes, there are too many civilian casualties in Gaza. Yes, the numbers are too high. Yes, too many families are grieving. And yes, we continue to urge the Israelis to be as careful and cautious as possible. That's not going to stop from the president right on down. But Israel is not trying to wipe the Palestinian people off the map. Israel's not trying to wipe Gaza off the map. Israel's trying to defend itself against a genocidal terrorist threat. So when we're going to start, if we're going to start using that word, fine, let's use it appropriately.
No, you are doing, I know you are, but what am I? You the same. You do the genocide.
We have more evil people in government without question. But for some reason, John Kirby, I always am like, how does he do it? Because he's like the QVC of war. And he has this ability to do it, to pull it off, to stand up there and just constantly sell the bullshit. It's why we should, your leaders should hold press conferences. Ours don't any longer. Because you want to watch them under that position. When you see Nixon sweating underwater, like, you should be able to see that. That's a really direct way to be able to tell what is actually happening. It should not be people skilled at debate. But John Kirby's ability to do this, I just wonder when he gets home how he just he must have the largest decanter in the world. I mean, if there's ever a man who needs to come home from work and
drink himself to sleep
and just Johnny Walker himself to a window for long, pensive, silent stares, it is John Kirby.
No, I mean, you know what? What's interesting about John Kirby also, and I think it's sort of like, again, it's part and parcel of, I think, a Zionist mentality of a mentality that very much dehumanizes or considers Palestinian humanity to be secondary to propping up the military state of Israel. He's incensed. He's super. And it's like, and again, with everything, which is like, I feel like you wouldn't be so mad, but you know, it's genocide. like I feel like it's personal for you.
Yeah.
And not necessarily because either you're Jewish, you got Jewish family. No, I think you know it's genocide.
Yes.
I think you know that right now, and we have to move on, but I think you know that the IDF has laid plans and that you've helped them lay plans to the full incursion of northern Gaza, if not all of Gaza. You know that they're talking about pushing all Palestinians in Gaza into the Sinai. You know they're talking about setting up refugee camps, and they're probably getting you to be like, so can you pledge a lot of money to go help them out in their desert, you know, when we push them into the desert?
How great is it on our weekend of celebrating genocide, we get to watch more white people explain or contextualize a genocide?
I mean, that's why we had the humanitarian pause. We're like, look, we can only do one genocide at a time.
We can't chew genocide gum and genocide walk at the same time.
Let's focus on Thanksgiving. No, it's actually, oh, that's so chilling. It's definitely the like, we're breaking bread with our enemies moment before we continue to wipe them, you know, off of this.
Rihanna may as well have played. We have a halftime.
Oh, God. All right, guys, you know what? Why don't we actually just skip the next story and we'll jump back to it after we bring him in. The founder of Community Movement Builders, a grassroots organization dedicated to creating sustainable Black communities, as well as the host on Black Power Media, right now also organizing to stop Cop City in Atlanta. Please welcome Kamal Franklin, by popular demand, in fact.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, popular demand. How are y'all doing?
Good. By the way, I just want to point out I wasn't brought on by popular demand because I would have gotten that title.
Nobody wanted. Nobody. We wanted Jose, and we sort of have him. Oh, my God. Well, my cat was so annoying last night. So come out, please.
Oh, no. Welcome. I was going to thank you guys for including in my introduction the Black Power Media thing. I get chastised for a channel I helped started for not promoting it properly. So thank you for putting it in a bio.
You should get a hat. You should get a hat.
I should get a hat. Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Easy way.
But come out. This, again, you know, we had Micah Herskind back on in early this year, before, right after, a couple weeks after Tortuguita, who was an activist in the forest, the forest name.
Wilani, the Wilani Forest.
The Wilani Forest, who was there, who was basically the victim, along with other activists who were in the camping in the forest, of, you know, an extrajudicial killing. I mean, an assassination of him, as the autopsy reveals. He was shot 14 times. Just horrendous. We haven't had an update on what's going on. And I know there was a mass day of action earlier this month, and that the movement is only growing stronger, that this repression is not silencing people. It is awakening them. It is galvanizing them. The lengths to which the police and the city of Atlanta will go to override the will of the people on this building, this complex. But can you just give us an update? Yeah, well, what is the state of everything and right now?
Sure. Well, you know, just to go back a little bit, post Tortuguita's assassination, as you said, since that time, the week before, the month before that time, the police, along with the police, the Atlanta police, the DeKalb County police, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, some reports indicate the Federal Bureau of Investigation and Homeland Security began to conduct raids in the forest. And in that first forest raid, they arrested approximately 12 to 13 people. And then it was the second raid in which Tortuguita was killed, in which others were arrested. And since that time, we now have a total of 60, over 60 people who've been charged with domestic terrorism. And then quite recently, approximately now 3 weeks ago, we had folks who, well, approximately a couple of months ago, but 3 weeks ago for the arraignment, we had all the folks who were previously arrested tied together in RICO charges, racketeering charges. And so folks are also dealing with that. And obviously, since the assassination of Tuatagita, we have demonstrations, rallies, town halls. We mentioned the Block Cop City action, which took place approximately 2 weeks ago, which was a mass configuration of people from outside of Atlanta and some in Atlanta who came together to encircle or to stop work at the site. And on the march, which was on the street, they were met by a line of police who began throwing tear gas and sound blasters or sound grenades. I was amongst the folks who was in the march itself. And so this type of repression and the ways in which we saw the repressive tactics of the police, again, was further indication for all of us of the militarization of police. Again, the training of police, not here in Atlanta, but across the country, that would take place with a Cop City facility that would be built, and the further training, internationally speaking, of soldiers with the IDF, police agencies within Israel, which have already done work with Atlanta in terms of continual militarization of police. I will mention this one particular fact when it comes to the Israeli police and the connection with Atlanta. The Atlanta police give credit to the Israeli surveillance system as the ways in which they set up their own surveillance system here in Atlanta. So in other words, a police captain went to Israel, spoke about the surveillance system that he was shown and he was quite enthusiastic about duplicating in Jerusalem, brought that system back to Atlanta. Atlanta is now the most surveilled city in the world outside of five cities in China.
Wow.
So that's what it's going to say.
Unbelievable.
Birthright for cops is truly an incredible program. I do want to ask you, because what has happened is this RICO case, right? Which happened simultaneously with the, you know, the Trump RICO case in Georgia, which was so searing and ironic. And I think almost like Palestinian liberation in this whole question of this, you know, being honest about what's going on there. In Gaza, is this interesting divide between like what is safe for liberal media and libs, hey, we all hate Trump, and then at the same time, how RICO is being used against nonviolent protesters in Atlanta, and it's like, we're just, you know, okay, we're just not going to talk about that, but that is massive to have, you know, the state judicial system weaponized against you like this. Can you talk more about, like, yeah, what's the state of that RICO case? I mean, it's so absurd. We looked at, I think I've, in other programs, looked at some of, like, the details. It's like putting up a poster that maybe had the circle A on it, if even that.
I think when you look back at the, starting off with this, but if you look back at the history of let's say, surveillance in the 60s and 70s, we reached a point in this country where the Watergate surveillance, right, where basically one party surveilled another and then got busted. The media was all over that once that story broke, right? That was a huge story. So power fighting against other power was huge, as in terms of a football game view of it, of one team against another. At the same time, this surveillance was going on and going on under Democratic as well as Republican regimes. COINTELPRO was still happening, the counterintelligence program of the 60s and 70s, which basically mass surveilled the civil rights movement, including Dr. King, the Black Power movement, white radicals, the anti-war movement. That was barely covered in the media, even when documents leaked. So you have, when organizers or activists are attacked by the state itself is allowed to do that, or given credence to do that by media, by claiming that they're doing something around the issue of criminality. And the media either doesn't cover it, or it covers it in a certain way to lead the general public to believe that the state is actively going after some sort of criminal element. And as you stated, these RICO indictments are on their face. As a former practicing attorney, talking to other attorneys who've looked at the actual indictment, it reads as humor, as something which people right. can't believe that a lawyer filed this, and this is considered a real indictment. This indictment traces the so-called criminal conspiracy by the 61 people who've been teamed together, who a lot of which, of course, have never met, some of which came one day to a music festival, were cordoned off by the police. Their IDs were checked. If they had in-state IDs, they were let go, in-state Georgia IDs. If they had out-of-state IDs outside of mm-hmm. Georgia, they were arrested and charged with domestic terrorism and later charged with the RICO charges. So not people who have been involved in Cop City organizing or actions, but people who just happened to come to a music festival are now facing domestic terrorism charges and RICO charges. And so when the state does this, it does this to scare organizers and activists and to label those folks as criminals and to try to make it so that they can't and or won't participate in further actions because they're scared off.
So what was the strategy with arresting out-of-state people? Was it like, these out-of-state, you know, hooligans are the ones coming in, the like narrative, stirring up stuff? Or what? Well, yeah, what was the narrative there?
The narrative, which the state has been pushing since the very beginning of this, is that this is not sort of an indigenous or local movement to stop Cop City, but this is outside agitators. This is their language specifically. The mayor, the governor, the right-wing white Republican governor, and the so-called liberal Democratic black mayor have teamed up together to use the same language of Southern segregationists to call people who are protesting outside agitators. And so their basic premise, and this is also part of the indictment, where they go through a history of what they say anarchism is, describing mm-hmm. anarchism, giving us different definitions of it, and saying that this is the leading cause and reason for the Stop Cop City movement, basically, again, painting it as an anarchist movement, as opposed to the locally led movement of a diverse group of people, from civil rights activists to community organizers, activists to environmentalists, who are organizing against Cop City.
That's ironic because, like, anarchists don't really believe in borders, you know, and state borders also. So it's kind of like, you know, we're all from the same place.
They just keep using the exact same playbook. There's like 10 different ways they can frame this so that it always makes people feel like it's authoritarianism working on their behalf. Mm-hmm. And the ultimate irony in this one, which you kind of alluded to, is that what is being protested, aside from where it is being built, is this sort of training is what is being utilized against this movement. There's kind of this like toppling within itself dystopian irony.
Yes,
that
yes.
is like you're trying to stop the police from getting further out of control, and the police are using their out of control military ways to try to silence it.
And sure Biden will say, well, that's why we need to build it, you
and
know?
Give more cops. Yeah. The solution to everything is always more cops.
I mean, remember at the
more training. Yeah. Training. Yes.
Well, remember at the State of the Union address maybe 2 years ago when Biden stood up and said, don't defund the police,
yeah.
but fund the police. And he got a yes. standing ovation from both sides of the aisle, from the Republicans
as well as
and
I would
the
say
Democrats.
A lot of the liberals who had changed their profile picture during the BLM movement, mm-hmm. who then sort of lost the thread of that argument and fell right into that camp yeah. as well. And then you also had the petition recently, right? They've just stalled your petition.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about, you know, the actual vote, like actually putting it to yeah. the people of Atlanta?
So what happened, so basically the organizers went on the offensive and called for a petition drive to have on the ballot, a ballot initiative to let the people themselves decide and vote on whether or not Cop City should exist. Organizers went out and collected over 116,000 ballot signatures, most of which we verified that we met the standard procedure for to have this on as a ballot initiative. The city of Atlanta decided to not count or not verify those signatures. And so they are sitting in limbo There's various court cases working through the courts right now, but basically they made it so that we missed the November deadline for having this petition on, and the earliest we could possibly have it on would now be in March of next year. At the same time, they're continuing to build out Cop City as we speak because they've cordoned off the area and they've made sure that the developers and the corporations that have put money into this are going to get what they want, which is a militarized police training center, which is going to be continually opposed to organizers, activists, and like you said at the beginning, continue to over-police Black and brown and poor communities.
Mm-hmm. But it'll have a Chick-fil-A, so, or whatever the hell is going to be there. Yeah, can you talk about, because like in the Wilani Forest, like we're talking about just cutting it down or large portions of it. So maybe like physically how it's going to look or what their plans are, but then also, weren't there plans to not do that and have it be a green space for the people of Atlanta? And how did that take such a massive U-turn other than, I am assuming, corporate cash and donations?
Well, like you said, it took a massive U-turn, particularly after the uprisings of 2020, after Breonna Taylor was killed, George Floyd was killed, here in Atlanta, Rashad Brooks was killed. Basically, the Atlanta Police Foundation, in contingent with the City of Atlanta and the Atlanta Police Foundation and Atlanta Police themselves, decided to dust off old plans of building out this Cop City idea. So this was an idea that they had plans for that they did never moved on. But they decided after the uprisings of 2020 against police violence, when people were calling for defunding the police, when people were calling for the abolition of police, when people were calling for finding alternatives for public safety, Atlanta ignored all of that and decided to push this idea of building this massive militarized police training center. One quick note that I wanted to get out earlier was that the indictment against those charged with RICO traces the beginning of the so-called conspiracy, this criminal conspiracy, not to when we started organizing against Cop City, but they trace it to the day that George Floyd was assassinated by the cop. That,
oh,
for them,
my God,
in their own document, is the beginning date for the conspiracy in which people are being charged for, the beginning of the criminal enterprise. So I wanted to make sure that was known.
How are they, like, honestly getting away with that? That's so racist and messed up. It's just, they got uppity.
Yeah.
They got uppity with the amount of Black people that were being assassinated by cops.
Yeah, the fact that people had the nerve to protest against police violence, how dare you? That in itself is a threat, right?
You honestly, it's so fucked up to look back and be like, it might have been better to not have had this moment that felt like this actual swing moment. In retrospect, it just kind of made the establishment really strengthen the grip around all of that.
Dig in their heels. I mean, Occupy arguably did the same thing, although then it gave us...
Once they get scared, once they see that there is actual, that something is coming for them, then they react in this more...
Yeah, I mean, it's the state of any repressive fascist-like state, right?
Yeah.
As soon as there's any pressure put on it to do anything democratic or not to do something to take away more rights, it continues to use whatever power it has to protect itself. And so that's what's happening. So really quickly about the green space. The Wilani Forest is adjacent to a working class Black community. And that Black community was promised, and the entire community was in promise that space, the Wilani Forest, would be used for camping trails, parks, playgrounds. In other words, there are documented plans which were already on the table for how that area would be used. Again, as soon as the uprisings happened and they cleared the deck, all those plans were pushed to the side and they ushered back out these plans that they had to build this militarized police training center.
Just so fucked.
Yeah, it's... So, I mean, it also feels like... I mean, look, Standing Rock won, ostensibly, right? Like, you know, and yes, there was the, you know, the Mountain Valley Pipeline that Manchin got passed. But, you know, Standing Rock was that watershed moment. It feels like when it comes to indigenous rights and it comes to like protecting water and whatnot. And I do feel like Cup City, I mean, it does feel like a lot of the energy from 2020 is funneling. If they say that it's the beginning of the, you know, George Floyd moment, okay, sure, let's give it to them. You know what I mean? Because it's like a lot of the efforts that came out of 2020, I mean, legislatively completely died. Completely. Nobody, as Gareth said, had, you know, the balls to basically stand by it. And on the local level, any like efforts to move money, and there have been some efforts to move money out of, you know, these massive police budgets. They've also tried to find here in LA, like finding ways to weasel out of, you know, actually having to give 10% up of, you know, the LAPD's budget, or getting the money from somewhere else, or, you know, in massive media campaigns to basically naysay some of the efforts to, you know, move money out of the police force. Oh, this didn't work. They defunded it. You know, the right is saying we already defunded the police somehow, that it was defunded when, you know, we marched. If only that's how easy social change happened. So it's almost like this feels like it does. And I'm sure, tell me about the organizers and the folks. Does this feel like a continuation of some of that, you know, BLM energy?
No, I mean, I think we're definitely in a period of what I would call a heightened consciousness and heightened mobilization. Obviously, not just on police murders, Cop City, going all the way back to Occupy Wall Street. Now here, in terms of the issue of Palestine, in my lifetime of being an ally of the Palestinian movement and liberation cause, I've never seen this type of reaction. So there's obviously a moment where people are reckoning with capitalism, with authoritarianism, with U.S. hegemony. And I think we're in a period where that is ongoing. And I think the state has reacted in certain ways. I mean, I don't think anybody really thought the state was going to defund its police, right? The use of the police force is what, in a domestic level, is what keeps the powers that be in charge and in place with the powers to arrest, murder, bring people to court, lock people up for extended periods of time. They're not giving up that power. And I would also say that, you know, during the movement, what we had is when the movement was dying down a little bit in 2020, 2021, is a new narrative of high crime, right? The media, the powers that be, the politicians seized on a post-COVID so-called uptick in crime to suggest that we needed more police. And that was the theme that they were running on. And so our understanding of this is that we never necessarily expected them to do anything in our favor without continually putting pressure, organizing, movement building, and so forth. And so we will have to continue to do that. There's no, giving up of resistance under any expectation that the policing agencies which oppress us are somehow, and the people who lead them, they're somehow going to see the light. Like this is going to take a lot more organizing action and struggle before we see the type of changes that we really want to see, because the state with their capitalist allies, or the capitalists with their state allies, I should say, are not giving up their power, their resources without a fight.
I had a last question around, you know, Georgia as this, you know, as this force on the national scale, you know, in terms of like, you know, turning Georgia turning blue in the last election. And it is so, I guess it's just a commentary, but again, Biden, who says we need to fund the police and yet ostensibly was put into power thanks to the movement around BLM that wasn't a pro-Biden movement, but sure as shit was like the repression under Trump, the extrajudicial killings under Trump, like we don't want that. And we will throw in our lot here with Biden. And obviously you've got, you know, Georgia, and the flipping of the Senate was huge. Stacey Abrams not being governor, but with a massive movement behind her. Like it feels almost cruel, like scripted cruelty, to have Cop City be built in Atlanta, in this state that again flipped blue for Biden, and a Democratic Party that's done fucking nothing around prison reform or cop reform or anything like that. But maybe just your thoughts on like how this bodes sort of nationally.
I would argue that it wouldn't be a surprise that this would happen under Democratic regimes or Democratic leadership, whether locally or nationally. Most of the cop killings that have happened in cities have happened under democratic regimes who've been the leadership of those police agencies who've done nothing to curtail their over-policing and use of violence, because they are, in a lot of ways, they want that over-policing and use of violence. So the things that we can agree upon with that the Republicans and Democrats are always going to be on the same page on are cops and capitalism. Right. And so there's no light really there when we have those things. So we're not surprised by that. Even under the so-called new progressive senators, none of them have come out against Cop City. None of them took a stance against Cop City. Stacey Abrams didn't take a stance against Cop City. The mayor of Atlanta pushed Cop City and again worked with a white right-wing Republican governor who is overtly a white supremacist in a lot of ways. They found walking hand in hand using the language of Southern segregationists to put down a movement to stop police violence. These folks, whether Republicans or Democrats, as Malcolm X used to say, whether wolves or foxes, mean no good for the Black community. They mean no good for working class communities. They are there to protect capitalism, and they protect capitalism through their cops.
Do you feel like that's turning maybe the electorate? Like, I mean, do you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. just like souring them on the.
I think Biden has a lot of. I think Biden has a lot of upcoming issues in respect to telling people like us or people who are liberal to progressive. I'm more of a radical, but liberal to progressive folks that. Stay with me because I can provide all these good things for you. When we see on issues of policing,
right.
And even more importantly at this particular moment, someone who's actively funding a genocide, who's actually providing cover for a genocide, to think that we can put all of that to the side because there is another evil character who the claim is that they're going to do worse. They're going to do worse than what Biden is doing in Palestine. It's like, oh, really? So instead of 16, 17,000, what, we're going to get the numbers up more? So it's not a winning argument for me. And I would think for a lot of people who are having a second and third thoughts that the lesser of two evil thing is something that's going to work to bring people out in large support. It may not bring people, as I think some of the polls are suggesting, to go out and vote for Trump, but it will make people stay home and say, who cares? Who gets in? Because my struggle is in the street. My struggle is against both parties and against this entire system. And that's what I'm hoping that people get out of this continually, as opposed to thinking that one party or another is going to save us.
Calling yourself a radical, because progressive, the term for a while was like, all right, I can identify with that, until it actually, like every other movement got co-opted by capitalism and sort of usurped and sucked into that. And I think
I think it's when Elizabeth Warren had a giant inflated Bailey dog. That's when I stopped being a progressive.
I think around the time where AOC wore the dress to the Met Gala was where I was like, this is a 9/11 dress for me. I'll never forget. But
also, I forgive. I'm a stan. I'm a Swiftie for AOC. Keep going.
Oh no. I also think that Brian Kemp got softened when he sort of became to the liberals became a bit of a resistance to Trump.
Oh yes.
I think that sort of softened him for people, and he, like you said, is so dangerous. What helps support you guys, that people who aren't in Georgia or Atlanta, what is the best way to support, to give credence to the movement?
Well, if you go to our website, communitymovementbuilders.org, what we have there is a Stop Cop City page. And there's a list of things that we ask people to do who are not in Atlanta, not in Georgia, in terms of helping to support the movement. And that is everything from doing the easy stuff of calling, emailing elected officials, to a list of developers who are involved in Cop City, and people doing direct action, people organizing protests, people going to their places of business, their storefronts or whatever, and protesting in front of them. The corporations, so asking folks to boycott and to call out the corporations who have given upwards of $40 to $50 million into Cop City. So we ask people to do those actions continually, whether it's social media, live actions, call-in actions. Those are the ways that folks can help. And when we call for weeks of actions, and there will be more of them, we do ask people to come to town. We do want the outside agitators coming to town and agitating with us, because we want folks in
mass. Don't bring your ID.
Don't bring your ID. Yeah, that's the problem.
Don't even bring your cell phone, honestly, because some of the surveillance tactics you're talking about are so sophisticated and insane.
Definitely. Well, the tracking of people through obviously cell phones, the hooking up of the when I talked about Atlanta being the most surveilled city, the hooking up of surveillance between cameras that can basically follow you everywhere. So they have an amazing system of surveillance and what I would call criminality at work. And I think we need a people's movement to stop them.
Yeah.
These universities are invested. I'm here at the page. That's wild.
It's crazy.
And that's so disgusting.
It really is such a, it is so, I mean, again, it's like, I think you always feel like you're kind of at these hinge moments, but this is such a hinge moment for a great, there's like a nice convergence of taking away land and what you're building on it. And it is as egregious as it gets.
I mean, lastly, like, what about media coverage? And then, like, I know maybe Ossoff and Warnock are like, they're not showing up, but are you guys making sure they know that they're on the wrong side of this?
Oh, they know. Yeah. And yes.
But we can call them. Like, that's an easy
definitely call. Yeah. No, that's what we want, calls and so forth. But we've had protests at various events that they've spoken out. Speakers have challenged them at events in terms of talking about Cop City, and they've given wishy-washy answers, right? And the only times they've made any statements have been on the RICO charges, and they gave some bland statements. And at the time of the arrests of the people who ran the bail fund with false and fake charges of white-collar criminality, they also made a statement. So let's be clear. The bail fund, the infrastructure movement is being attacked. Bail funds have been around for over 100 years. The county and the state of Georgia is going after the Atlanta bail fund, which has been around way before even the Cop City incident. And I'm going to end with this. So, you know, there's a convergence here happening on both sides of the aisle. So what we see against for those who are the establishment has converged. And so, again, whether or not that's corporations, Republicans, Democrats, capitalists, developers, they have converged around the idea of wanting Cop City built. But on the flip side of that, we've had a vast array of movement organizers and activists, everything from environmentalists to grassroots organizers to anarchists to civil rights workers to voter rights workers, who've all come out and said that they are opposed to Cop City and who have all continued to use their leverage. So we are building a movement in Atlanta which is going to go further than whatever happens with Cop City, which will challenge elected officials and do grassroots organizing on the ground for years to come. And that's really what we're building in Atlanta. And that's really going to be the outcome of this struggle against Cop City.
Absolutely. I think that's excellent. And there needs to be left pressure in that state, you know, and like you're saying, it can't just be the, you know, Stacey Abrams and Ossoff and Warnock sort of taking all the air out of the room when it comes to progressives. We're radicals, damn it. Kamau Franklin, thank you so much for taking time. Everybody, communitymovementbuilders.org. Check it out. Sign the petitions. Make those calls. And it's Giving Tuesday, so kick some funds if you can as well.
Thank you. I appreciate y'all having me.
Take good care. Thank you, Gareth. Right. Yeah.
That's the model. That is really the model of, like, I remember getting into an argument with a family member probably 5 or 6 years ago when I said they're going to make protesting illegal. And the look on this person's face was like, what? What are you talking about? But this is how you do it. It's like you maybe allow people to congregate in front of a place, but anytime anything gets traction, it's water cannons and arrests.
I mean, unless, you know, they're business owning white men, boat dads who on January 6th wanted to go.
Yes, it depends the movement. Yes.
It depends on how many militias, like, it depends on how many, like, Osama bin Laden targets they have.
Right.
Little paper targets. Yeah. I'm like, it's so funny how a lot of this comes back to me remembering, like, my honest reaction to January 6th being like, I've been in protests. None of them have been ever that violent. And yet we were violently repressed. Like, you know, they got tear canisters. Like, I'd never been tear gassed. Interestingly, I'd never been tear gassed until I protested in Oakland when Trump was elected. And literally, we were just like milling. We were like, no, we're sad. Fuck, I hate Hillary. Like, it was like we weren't doing shit. And then all of a sudden, I was like, what the fuck? Like, just like stinging eyes.
Felt like cosplay.
Oh my God, yeah. But it was just so like, oh, OPD, Oakland Police is just like, oh no, we're just going to spray. We spray. We do the tear gas.
Well, it's
like,
a lot. They have quotas. They have ticket quotas and they have gas quotas.
Yes, they do.
Shoot it off towards the end of the month? It probably
Yeah.
If you get anywhere on the 28th, 29th, they're really, that tear gas is burning a hole in their cannon.
Oh man, keep that same energy for our next segment. No, I do think it's important. We got to talk about the attack in Vermont, in Burlington, Vermont, over the holiday. 3 20-year-old students, Palestinian American, were shot by clearly a Islamophobic psycho. A what?
A King of the Hill character.
Yeah, a King of the straight up. I mean, so here is the suspect. He just looks like an old Civil War fucking ghost.
Hey, it is like, it truly looks like they just were like, if they were like, this is what this skull would have looked like if we were able to see him in the Civil War. Computer graphics are able to give us a outlay of what he potentially would be.
Yeah, no, this is a John Wilkes Booth type character, yes. For sure.
Yes.
This is Tess Owens' tweet saying, in a photo of him, saying, we verified social media accounts belonging to the man accused of shooting 3 Palestinian American college students. In one, he describes himself as a radical citizen. Oh, great. Now we're talking now about radicals bad. Again.
Well, we got to find another one.
Let's go back to wokies.
I'm eventually just going to be a liberal again. That's what's going to happen. I'm going to be like, it's liberal. I'm back to liberal. Okay, everything they've taken everything else from me and they abandoned that. I am now what we call a liberal.
We're just gonna be like, this is a joke, guys. We're just gonna be like, I'm a jihadi, all right? I'm a strict jihadi.
I am actually Taliban. So, well done, everyone.
Okay, so. Okay, whoa. This actually points to something. Anyway, here we go. Democracy and capitalism for oath keepers. He patrols democracy and capitalism for oath creepers. I don't know what those words mean. I don't know what he intended those to mean. I don't give a shit what they meant. He shot 3 people while they were walking home, doing absolutely nothing. They were taking a breather, I think visiting family members in Burlington. They were walking to the house of Mr. Awartani's grandmother for dinner. Ah, yes. And according to Marwan Awartani, the great uncle and former education minister of the Palestinian Authority. Oh, interesting. Hey, hello. The young men told family members they were speaking a hybrid of English and Arabic before the man shot at them 4 times without saying anything, according to a family spokeswoman. 2 of the victims were wearing Palestinian keffiyeh as a traditional headdress. According to documents, Hisham Awartani, a student at Brown University, was shot in the spine. And by the way, he is looking like he will recover, but not recover the use of his legs at this point. Tahsin Ahmed, a student at Trinity, was struck in the chest, and Kinan Abdelhamid, a student at Haverford College, was struck in the backside. All 3 men are 20 years old. It is a miracle that they survived. I mean, I am not a religious person, but I'm like, yeah, someone was watching out for them. And I guess, Gareth, what this sort of kicks up for me is sheer rage at the ways that the war on Gaza and this sort of, again, fealty to the Israeli military has created a narrative of, there's anti-Semitism on the rise and there's Islamophobic attacks on the rise and they're both equal and that's what's happening. And we're led to believe that the people doing the anti-Semitism are Palestinian peace protesters, like the people calling for ceasefire are doing an anti-Semitism by saying the word genocide or chanting a particular slogan nobody likes, right? Like that's what we're, and then the people who are actually killing, whether it's a 6-year-old Palestinian kid, whether it's shooting these 3 Palestinian American boys, young men, they're all white supremacists. They're fucking white nationalists. Like, the enemy is the same. The same people doing anti-Semitism, truly, Tree of Life Synagogue massacre, Tucker Carlson on a Tuesday, and the people who are killing Palestinians, there, it's not Jews and Arabs going at each other. It's fucking white supremacists. No, that's always, who's doing both of those things.
There's always some fucking white guy who was on Facebook and as like, this is, you know, it's my time for to go and step in. And there's no way, like, I forget what you said about his uncle, but there's no way he had that connection. You know, he wasn't like, I am attacking.
He doesn't know about the PA.
No, like... he just sees, he sees the headwear and he is just like, you know, I mean, this is just what happens. The thing is that there, when you read the roots of what this guy's talking about, he hates capitalism. And so you have this root of all this horribleness that is birthed out of the systemic disease in our country, which is capitalism, in no way to justify ever what any reaction like this. And I think that the, you know, the racists exist with or without it, but people are so fucked. And this guy views his enemies as these three men that he shot, because they're all so, everyone's so fucked. It's coming for everyone. Like the water is being poisoned for everybody. I still think guys like this probably go out and do this shit because we live in a country with not only a gun problem, but a major race problem. But it's interesting when you go, oh, he's anti-capitalist too. Huh.
Yeah, he's against capitalism. Yeah, no, he's exactly. Well, and that's exactly the kind of, again, anti-Semitic and Islamophobic, you know, right-wing nationalism that the likes of Tucker Carlson want to see and foment, and you know, and again, what I fucking hate is these liberal arbiters like the New York Times saying like, well, it's just, there's, you know, you've got these crazy college kids doing the anti-Semitism. It's like, no, you don't. You know, you don't at all. That's not anti-Semitic. And the true enemy is the far right. Then the far right is the fucking Israeli military as well. Is, you know,
our ability to kind of thread that needle throughout this whole argument has been, it's unreal. I don't know what's crazier to see, that or it working.
Yeah.
You know, where you see that people do sort of think that there's no upending of the Ukraine argument within our government's response.
Oh, that's the dissonance is wild, that they're still saying
It has become unreal to watch. I mean, you every few months you just look back and go, wow, we actually were doing pretty well back then.
You know what? I'm having the opposite reaction when it comes to Ukraine. And I'm someone who was like, no, I do think we need to support people's sovereignty, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's like Ilhan Omar called for conditioning of weapons, not conditioning. She called for a not just an endless stream of military weaponry to Ukraine. Like, what's, do we have a diplomatic situation? Like, is there, are we going to,
well, we did, but we shut it down. We did, but we didn't want it. We don't, anytime it, I mean, again, it's basically what Assange said at the get, which is, this is all just a way to funnel money. Yeah. I mean, we look at everything as a way to funnel money. Even our, even the roots of our relationship with Israel has been, it's all based around war, militarism.
Absolutely.
And wherever we can find ways to funnel that and channel that, we will. It's just unfortunate for the establishment that Ukraine and Israel happen so close together, because, you know, Iraq gave us a nice breather as far as that went. And, and now it's actually, they're sort of, it's almost like, when the train in East Palestine,
that's right,
right after Joe Biden shut down their ability to strike, it's like those two events were a little too close together, but we were still able to be okay with it. But it was getting a little tight there for a second.
Yeah, a little too on the nose, but yeah, that's still
a
just
little oopsie poopsie.
Uh-huh, just missed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, all to say, obviously, but thoughts go out, and this is absolutely it's unconscionable. Yeah. It's ridiculous. And, and to say that, I'm sorry, but to say that Palestinian and Muslim Americans face the exact kind of fear as white Jews is absolute dog shit. I'm sorry. It's dog shit.
Would agree with you, but I don't. I follow Amy Schumer. So.
Exactly. And why is it that all of the crazy white bitches who are losing their shit are so non-Jewish passing? They're so goy passing. Matt and I have been bitching about this for so long. People, you were like, oh, you're Jewish?
Matt's been
literally
having,
no idea.
By the
literally
way,
no idea.
Matt's having a moment.
Matt's having a moment, which is very fun for him, because the one thing he doesn't have to do on his videos is start off with as a Jew, because you look at his face. Anyway.
Unfortunately, as a white man, I can't agree or disagree with that.
I just work here at REI.
I'm a carabiner guy. How much? You doing whole family or is it just you solo? That'll grip you.
It's so gross. It's so ridiculous to me. And it's like, again, it's weird that it correlates the amount of money and privilege you have that you somehow feel more threatened the higher live on a literal ivory tower or a hill.
That's the reason why social media is so ridiculous. It's so, because it's like, yeah. Eat your DoorDash, watch your Hulu, and tell me how bad it is.
Exactly. I just had to get off my chest. Anyway. Oh, God.
I didn't know Matt was Jewish.
He is having a moment. We were at a farmer's market, and there was a woman who's like, I just love your videos.
And that's the best time to say, leave me alone, lady.
And then I just grabbed him, and I was like, he's married.
He's my Jew.
Get your own Jew.
Get your own Jew.
Oh boy, oh boy. Let's get into our final segment. Here we go. There's some backstory to this. So it is 7 weeks to the Iowa caucuses. Now, Gareth, as a as an Englishman.
Yes.
You don't understand.
What
caucuses.
You miss us yet? Miss us? Want to come back yet? Do you? Yeah. You thought you'd fight. Yeah. You moved out of the house. You thought you were gonna fucking conquer Hollywood. Well, look,
we can't do it.
Back needing a place to crash, eh? Fucking hell.
Can you reoccupy Palestine, please?
Oh, here we go again. Yeah, that's where we're at too. You guys were pretty good, to be honest.
So. There are caucuses. Let me explain what a caucus is. A caucus is...
when a bunch of penises fight.
Yeah. It's like a game of political Red Rover that nobody really understands the rules to and takes 8 hours. But anyway, Iowa votes Iowa caucuses first. But the first state usually that votes in the primaries is New Hampshire. And I went to New Hampshire. They're very proud of that fact. They're very live free or die.
I think, wasn't that the place that had the old man in the mountain? And then one day it was like, they sold tons of old man in the mountain merch. It was this thing that looked like a face in the mountain. And then that fell one day and they're like, no. So this is all they have now.
No, they are truly, they're trying to create like the world's biggest cheese wheel as we speak, like anything to get some shine back to New Hampshire. But the problem is the DNC has wanted the first state that votes to be a more diverse state, specifically more Black voters. So they had chosen South Carolina as the first state that would go in the primaries, not in New Hampshire. And New Hampshire got mad. So Wednesday, a New Hampshire's top election official announced that his state would hold its 2024 presidential primary on January 23rd, defying the Democratic National Committee, which had urged the state to hold its primary after South Carolina. And weirdly, because they're going to do this, and I don't understand how this works, so I'm sorry, but New Hampshire's decision to defy Biden and the DNC means the president, who finished fifth in the Democratic contest in New Hampshire last cycle. Oof. Remember the early Biden days?
Oh, good.
So
I think back to those days so fondly.
So good.
When you were just like, yeah, it's Bernie. It's going to be Bernie.
No pandemic.
Yeah.
Bernie coming out strong.
Yeah, Biden was horrible.
So I guess there's something where, because he wasn't placed on the top, he didn't file to have his name appear on this ballot. He's not going to officially appear on the primary ballot in New Hampshire.
Well, wouldn't that be better for him though? Because that allows him to say, oh, well, that's why I lost New Hampshire. I mean, the whole...
Or he automatically gets a shoo-in. Like, I'm just not sure how that works with, like, if Marianne Williamson or,
I think,
like...
it'll be one of them. But I think he'll say, you know, I wasn't on the ballot. The South Carolina was where the election, or the caucuses and the primaries swung for Biden. That was where Biden became legitimate again. I mean, the reasons of that are, I'm sure you know, and we could go through again. But that was where it was. So there is this fear that because they have not had primaries anywhere, that's why he's avoiding these. So he's like, instead of taking the L, he's going to take the forfeit, essentially.
Yeah. I just think that's so, I mean, he'll be on the general ballot. I don't know.
Well, it's so stupid. I mean, again, it's like the idea that the DNC is allowed to have the term Democratic in their name any longer is just height absurdity. No primaries. No interest in primaries, no interest in acknowledgement of this problem, and instead we'll just completely avoid. And it's really shockingly not going to help Biden in New Hampshire.
No, it's not going to help him anywhere. It's just, okay, so this is, let's see. So Scanlon, this is back from New Hampshire, because he argues, which, by the way, New Hampshire is such a white state. Yes. He says diversity is not the real issue at play in this debate. At stake is who gets to determine the nominee of the party, elites on a national party committee by controlling the nominating calendar, or the voters. New Hampshire believes the voters of each state should decide who they prefer as a nominee to be president, not the power brokers in Washington, D.C. Have you seen our cheese wheel? God damn it.
As a man from Wisconsin, I don't appreciate you continuing to suggest that.
Have you seen
our old man in the mountain is cheese. So if you could find another white.
Have you seen the largest covered bridge in the world? There we go.
Thank you very much. But all those people that he's outcrying over are, and those are the similar systems that got that kept New Hampshire as the first one.
I know. It's just, but anyway, so the point is this, and I have thoughts. Which state, maybe the ones who don't pipe up as much, which state should vote first? This is First in the Nation. The longest preamble to a very stupid segment and game. But
I don't agree.
Not really a game.
I think my pitch.
Okay.
You can go first, but I'm just saying.
No. I want to hear your pitch.
I think my pitch is a way, like, this is an opportunity, right? So what is the best way to upend the system most with this vacuum that has been left there by the senility of Joe Biden? The first state should be, and I'm going to say it how I've always wanted to say it, Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
If we allow Puerto Rico to that changes a lot of what the candidates are going to start talking about.
So you actually allow them to vote in the primaries, because they cannot at this point.
So we are talking about a full statehood recognition.
Okay.
Which leads to them being the first caucus state.
I like that. That's a perfectly woke answer from you. Spoken like a jihadi.
By the way, I should point out that I have been unable to turn off the features on my computer that when I make human gestures, do things like that. So that was not on purpose. It's on my to-do list. I've been in Australia. No, you don't get it. There's tons. You want another one?
Yes.
All right. All right.
Wait, if you're listening, Gareth just gave the peace sign and a bunch of balloons flew up in his screen. This is not a feature on StreamYard, is it?
It's a feature on your Apple.
Okay.
So here,
on
I'll give you
any
give
video you... you're doing?
Yes.
Oh, you got
this
fucked
also
there.
An embarrassing one when it doesn't work.
It doesn't recognize you that you have. Oh my god! Nope. Wow,
it's pretty cool. Things are good.
You know, Steve Jobs is better dead. I think it's good.
There's actually, if I go like this, it shows Jobs as no, never mind. That was nice. That was corpse.
Oh god, that is really funny. That was a thumbs down, and a sort of rain cloud came over him. Obviously, the most populous state should vote first. California, hello, right here.
So you support Joe Biden?
No, it's a, this is a Cornell state. Absolutely. I mean, it's a Bernie Sanders state. My neighbor has a Marianne Williamson sticker, and I'm like, oh wow, that's pretty out there for someone who is never been kind to me.
They know about the bituation room.
Marianne Williamson. Anyway, but here's my thing, and please tell me if I'm crazy. What if?
I like it.
We all voted on the same fucking day. Mm. Why? Mm. Why is it staggered? Can we not tabulate correctly?
I can push back immediately.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that you're talking about shortening the election cycle to around a year, I would say that. And that, for me, as someone who gets hit by the election bug every year, every 2 years. No. I guess that's the
there's way too many trucks to be sold in the the spring Toyota-thon for the election cycle to be that fucking short.
Think of how many pie shops are going to be closing on the east with your little plan.
I mean, exactly. All the diners that we won't get to hear like the racist thoughts of the people inside of. Yeah. But like, this is the tip. This is like, we don't all get to look at each other's test scores here. We don't cheating here. No. It's a blind. We wouldn't look over at our neighbor's, voting booth and say, what'd you put down for number five?
I cheated a lot, but I know that
well,
is
same.
That I mean, again, the part of part of how I mean our elections are so dumb by every metric.
Indeed.
But yes, that seems to be one that would help a lot for sure. Also, ranked choice voting.
Oh, well, 100% ranked choice voting. But it's also just like the whole momentum thing is so weird. Yes. And it's also just more like there's just money. And
it allows the media to tell you who is the best shot, who's the most presidential. Think about the Howard Dean scream. Gives you these opportunities to build up or tear down.
I love in the apocalypse. Like, hey, how come we don't have, I mean, Howard Dean's not a savior. But
not anymore, but for a minute it looked like he could be until he was swallowed
like,
up.
Well, we don't have anything nice because a man gave a weird, and you know what, Gareth? It was weird.
It was not okay.
It wasn't of this world.
None of us are saying what he did was okay.
Do something normal, you know? Cheat on your wife, get caught with someone in a bathroom.
Yeah.
Don't scream like that. Anyway, it's all dumb, but hey, I love that New Hampshire. So apparently also the Iowa caucuses are going to go first still, but it doesn't count since the caucus, but they're not going to tell us the results of the caucus.
Well, to be fair, they didn't in the primary last time either.
No, they did not. It took them many weeks.
Pete Buttigieg won.
Yeah.
Shadow app or something.
Yeah, the app company one. They're not going to tell us until Super Tuesday who won the Iowa caucuses.
Listen, let Iowa out. You do you, Iowa, you little weirdos.
So weird. Oh my God.
That announcement will really have great resonance on Super Tuesday, by the way.
I mean, no, it won't.
Before Super Tuesday.
But you know what's last thing I'm going to say on this, it's just really funny as a Californian because I visited New Hampshire again in the primary of 2016 and talked to a lot of people. There are not that many people there. I sat outside of what is called a market basket, which is their Safeway, Vons, whatnot. Sure. And it was really cute. And I talked to people, had them sit down at my desk of very important thoughts. It was very adorable. And so many voters had shaken candidates' hands. So many of them were like, I don't know, Hillary's grip was a little too strong for me. Or, Biden didn't finish his pie. Or all the things that Bernie didn't, jack me off to completion. Like there's only, there's so many.
I have to get moving, otherwise I would finish this.
Each one of them has been particularly catered to because they are so early. So I understand, it's cool to have met a presidential candidate. Yes. Most Californians have not. No. And so, yeah.
No, that is what it is.
They want to feel special.
They are they met him. I have this friend of mine, and she's not a
Willie Gus's comment is it was the mittens.
It was the mittens. I would, but these are porous. I have a friend who loves Hillary, and the reason she does is because she said something to her once. And I'm like, yeah, but all this that she knows. I know. But she said something to her.
I mean, that's apparently Hillary's very good, like, interpersonally.
Yeah,
it's like,
well,
great.
Sure, I don't know. That I would be.
It's the whole, like, they're a good man, or she's a good, I know her. She's a God-fearing, like, who the fuck? Anyway. Yeah. Anyway, if you're in New Hampshire, we see you. You're special. We love you. Yay. You're a special little snowflake, just like all the snow on your covered bridge. Your little windmill cookies or whatever the fuck you do and have. No, I actually like the people in New Hampshire. They seem pretty chill.
Yeah.
But Gareth Reynolds, we've reached the end of the show.
Wow.
Can you tell people how they can find you and follow your work and stuff?
You can find me at Reynolds Gareth on social media. That's your IGs, your TTs, and your Twitters, as I still call it. And you can go watch my special, like you said, England Weed on the Rest and the rest. I can't remember the name.
On the rest.
And I have the Dollop podcast and a new podcast with my friend Jake Johnson called We're Here to Help, which is a call-in advice show. So go listen to that.
I haven't yet, and I don't know what I'm waiting for.
It's time.
I truly hope you're not ruining like that many lives. Like I hope it's Yeah, hell yeah. You play the audio clips or do people call in live?
They call live. So it's a live interaction. Yes.
What time do you guys film? Because I've got a problem.
Well, we film.
Is it like Loveline?
You email at helpfulpod@gmail.com.
Okay.
And then if we like what you have, we'll schedule a call.
Oh, okay. Because I had to
live air.
I called Loveline once and I can't tell this story on air. All right, guys.
You thought those guys didn't turn out to be conservatives.
Are you going to become an anti-vaxxer?
Yeah.
No, he'll be an anti-vaxxer and you'll just like.
I'll just be recommending that, you know.
No, wait.
They're both anti-vaxxers.
They're both anti-vaxxer, but Adam Carolla was just outed as having received like a bunch of money from like the Wilkes fracking brothers or some shit. Like, I forgot. He has like, someone's been propping up his career for a while. And I'm like, oh, that makes sense.
That does make sense.
Anyway, Gareth, you're wonderful. Take good care. Bye-bye.
God bless. USA, baby. Number one.
like to the CIA, the NSA officer listening. Bye-bye. That's my daughter right now. Bye-bye. Bye. She also likes to say tractor. Tato. It's very fucking cute. I wanted to read some comments and then fuck off into the night. Lever Action Gorilla on Twitch says Kamau is also from Black Power Media. That's right. And he shouted it out. Rosalba 14 says Black Power Media. Charlie Martini on YouTube. We could call the Cop City the pig pen. I like it. Gatling Combo, what I said, they should all vote first. Josie Justice, Israel should get to vote first. They seem to be getting most of the money. Indeed. Neil Mick says, I prefer genocide bathroom break. Yeah, indeed. And saying that he watches Democracy Now! Every morning. You know, Democracy Now! Is sort of good on... It's good on a lot of, it's good on international stuff, but when it comes to war, it's like, you know, you think that the rest of the media landscape would change, but honestly, it hasn't. It's Jazeera, it's Democracy Now!, it's The Intercept, it's, I would shout out Mondo Weiss. These are places that have great coverage. And sadly, so many places like Vice, like BuzzFeed News, I think in the last 10 years, we've seen sort of the rise and fall of a lot of online news outlets that actually did a pretty good job covering, you know, stories like Israel-Palestine in a way that you didn't just leave it to like TikTok and Instagram and such and random folks just like, you know, doing a deep dive. So anyway, all to say, yes, shout out to Democracy Now! They truly crush it on this. Schmegley on YouTube, every 10th prisoner, you get a free day of no bombing. Yeah, it's so ridiculous and cruel. Michael Gonzalez, but Rittenhouse is safe, right? And just in terms of the cop city and the protesters and anyone. Yeah, I mean, you're never going to hear Marjorie Greene or anybody talk about Cop City. I mean, they've never, the right has never stood for fucking anything in their lives. And whenever they protest, everyone's like, oh my God, do they have a point? Oh, let's talk about it. Do the parents who are summoning Proud Boys and Moms of Liberty, who are threatening students and threatening their families and threatening teachers, do they have a point? Are library books too sexual? That's next time on NPR. Like, I'm sorry, but there's a lot of handholding with right-wing protest movements that are often astroturfed and whatnot. Soul Life, thank you so much for being a member. They said they needed a Cop City due to low police morale, due to poor public perception of police. Like, bruh, there's a free way to fix that. Yeah, stop being the worst. Gary Cooper, don't call him a King of the Hill character. None of the old boys of King of the Hill were murderers. Thank you, Gary. And I can see why Paige, our producer, flagged that, because she is also a massive King of the Hill fan. Mandalorian, yeah, 20-year-olds, those people are babies. I feel so awful for them. Sella Lewis, but if we call for any solutions like better gun laws, we're called extremists. We take on the gun lobby and the war machine that funds this, and we're called extremists. Oh, in terms of, yeah, these killing. I mean, just like, ostensibly, we should be on the same side as cops when it comes to public safety and, like, yeah, the access to weaponry in this country. And yet we're not, because they insist on continuing to murder people and get away with it. And again, like Kamau was saying, it is a way Democrats also really love employing the cops, because they're the cleanup crew for not addressing systemic inequality and not addressing, exorbitant housing prices in the markets in cities across this country, or jobs, or access to public transportation, or fucking, I don't know, fixing a street or two, literally anything that makes a city livable. They're not willing to deliver on that. So they need the cops to lock people up and to criminalize poverty. That is part of the deal. Aces 8 says New Hampshire isn't nearly as conservative as Iowa. This is true. Also very white, but you're right, not as conservative. Gary Cooper, New Hampshire and Iowa are two of the whitest and most conservative states. Okay, so a little pushback. I don't think they should choose who the candidates. I mean, it's just weird. Like, it is true. Like, at this point, it's like, all right, if you are the Democratic Party, I don't know. I mean, maybe South Carolina. I'd say, like, I'm going to go with, like, a Midwest state. If I'm being 100%, I would say, like, Illinois. Some Midwest. Give it to the Midwesterners. Give it to, I don't know, Minnesota. Is that a state? Minneapolis. In Minnesota. Give it to Minnesota. You know what I'm saying? Just a little bit more diversity. Schmegley, tuxedo cat supremacy. Yes, Gareth's cat was in the background there in a photo, a beautiful, handsome photo. The half black rapper. It's staggered in case the DNC feels the need to course correct like they did last time. I think you hit the nail on the head right there. It is, we don't want to, and no party is like, well, we can't have that much democracy. It can't just be all the same time. We have to be able to finagle it. We have to be able to put our money behind, you know, the candidate that's going to protect capitalism. We got to get Obama on the phone. I mean, God, what a dark time, you guys. What a dark moment. What a dark moment. 2020, Obama makes the call and everyone is just like, okay, I guess so. In India, says Salah Lewis, they vote for a month and it's mandatory, like the census is for the US. Yeah, it's mandatory in a lot of countries. And I think that leads to other problems, but I'm not against it. One thing I just think we need to adopt from other countries is voting on the fucking weekend. That's it. Voting on the weekend, voting on the weekend, voting on the weekend, voting on a weekend. That's it. That is it. That is it. The mandatory thing, let's wait. Let's wait on that. I think, again, there's other ways to corrupt. When it's mandatory, you can buy people's vote. But hey, honestly, at least people will get paid at one point or another. But anyway, y'all, with that, let's bring in the fart song. You know what it is. It is where we thank all the people who have supported this show or have supported the show this week, specifically those who become patrons at $10 or more, people who subscribed on YouTube and Twitch, and just, you know, just all y'all. So do that right now with a fart song. We don't have a lot of patrons. $10 more, except for Dawn. Dawn Batson, you beautiful human being. Guys, this is my doula. No joke. She helped me birth my baby into this world, and she's a wonderful human being. She's a doula against genocide, and sadly, there are not nearly enough of them. Imagine that. But over on Twitch, RavenLight303 resubscribed with Prime. Thank you so much. Says 2 months, 2 bitchin' months down, 1,000 bitchin' months to go. I'll hold you to that. But thank you, RavenLight. And ZX227 gifted a 1 month tier one sub to Fascist Killa. Thank you. Also to Mike Boy for Mayor. Thank you. Robot Monkey Cat resubscribed with Prime. Willie Guster subscribed for 1 month at tier one. And then ZX227 also resubscribed. Francesca, I really appreciate coverage on Palestine, the way you deliver the news, and your jokes brings me back every time. Hey, that's what I'm here for. This is the point. If we can't laugh, it's not my revolution. We got to take ourselves less seriously because the entire fucking world is too serious. And that doesn't mean we don't fight for what's right. And also, Rosalba, thanks so much for resubscribing the prize. Wow, it's been a minute, hasn't it? Has it? Have I not chastised you for going away? Paper Art Dragon Art, thank you for resubscribing, also with Prime. And thank you to Paige Omek, our producer, to Maximilian Inhofe, and to Andy Vasoyan, the editor. We stream every Tuesday and Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. I will be streaming this Friday at 1 p.m. Don't miss it. Maybe we can have a little bit of a lighter... But please send me any story ideas. I love them. And until next time, which, by the way, before you go, we're going to be at SF Sketchfest on Sunday, January 28th at 8 p.m., I think, 7 p.m. at the Gateway Theater in San Francisco. And I am bringing for a live edition of the Bituation Room. I can't believe I'm burying this here, but I feel like I have the time and space to say it. My God, this has been a long stream. Emma Vigeland of The Majority Report, Miles Gray of The Daily Zeitgeist, and Nato Green of The Bugle Podcast, and also this podcast. It's been a minute since he's been on. Why did that light just change? We're doing it live, people. Don't fucking miss it. Link in the bio, SF Sketchfest, Emma, Miles, myself, Nato. If you know our work, you know what an incredible show this is going to be. I cannot wait to see you there. Have a great week. Until then, until Friday, fight the power, fuck the patriarchy, free Palestine, and don't just bitch about it. Be about it. Bye-bye.